Thank you.
A fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather, you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland. We never weak until the final siren's gone.
Good evening, Tiger fans around the country. Welcome to the Big Footy Tiger Cast for Monday night, the weekly live show. The therapy session. We're almost getting back to that territory almost. But welcome to everybody from wherever you're listening around the world. We appreciate all the love and support. EJ, welcome, mate. How's it going?
It's going all right. Just trying to scramble some stuff together last minute, but it's going all right.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of a scramble as well in the last 10 or 15 minutes. Jay-Z, no tigs tonight, so he will usually appear on the Wednesday night. It just gets tricky for him having like multiple conversations and voices going on at once, just with his concentration levels. So we just try and isolate him one-on-one, much like what the Bulldogs did to Noel Bolter on Sam Darcy. Isolate, well, probably didn't pay him the respect to even get isolated, to be fair. An interesting game. We'll get to the game shortly. The North Melbourne death ride chart. I haven't actually completed the chart yet, but I'll just quickly jump across and have a look at the ladder. So they're still 16th, North Melbourne, but they're up to 18 points now, which, look, I felt, EJ, on the weekend, the North Melbourne and Carlton game, it felt like a win-win for us in a lot of ways. Either North Melbourne won and it really flattened the Blues in some way, shape or form, or Carlton won and it kept the Roos at bay. But I mean, they are catching up. So now they've only got St Kilda and Melbourne ahead of them on 20 points each. And then it goes up to 24 points. So we'd need the D's and the Saints to pull their fingers out to try and create some separation there. But yeah, it's getting interesting now. With like a handful of games to go, the Kangaroos are putting out some good performances.
Yeah, they are. They've been pretty good. You can actually see the development. They've got a bunch of good young players. And my only disappointment out of that game is if you're going to go to the trouble of making us adjust the death ride chart, at least put your foot on the throat and do the job properly.
I know. Yeah, exactly right. Like,
you know, I've got a massive man crush on Wardlaw.
He's good.
Yeah, he's just a good, honest, old-fashioned crack-in footballer. There's no bells and whistles. He's not going to do blind turns and all that sort of stuff, but he's just, you know, a good old-fashioned footballer. Comben, over his injury worries, although he looks like he's hurt his shoulder again, but...
Yeah.
You know, he's made a big difference down back. Toby Pink actually looks like an AFL footballer.
Yeah, he had a good game.
Yeah, so, no, they're going well. And it doesn't really, I don't think it really matters. I mean, whether we get pick 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah.
I mean, who cares? It's still going to be a very good pick.
It is. And it's still going to land us a quality player. Where was the comment I saw? From Jay Tiger. As much as I want to admit it, North are a minimum 4 to 6 games better than us. And that's okay. I think we all thought that at the start of the year, given they're probably a few years into their cycle of development and rebuild. So that's not so bad, I don't think. A few people are asking about your background picture, EJ, before we go any further.
We'll get to that later on.
Okay, no reveal yet.
All right.
No, that's okay. I'm liking it. All right, well, before we get stuck into the AFL game, do we want to do the VFL first or the AFL first? Maybe we do AFL first. We'll get the bad stuff out of the way and we'll leave the VFL for after. We'll do it in a bit.
I had people around and my son's soccer, so I didn't see any of the VFL, so I'm looking forward to hearing about it. And I'm sure the comments will light up. I saw a few posts. So
yes, it's Randy Marsh.gif happening everywhere at the VFL game. We'll do the VFL after. We'll do the AFL one first. Richmond, obviously, we got done by the Doggies by 79 points, 21-9-135 to 8-8-56 at Marvel Stadium, which was a little bit disappointing. I know that a lot of us probably guessed about the 50 to 60, 70 point mark. So in a lot of ways, it was probably par for the course with where we're at and where they're at. To be fair, the Dogs, I know they're ninth, but they haven't had a lot of their good players on the park for a lot of the year, and they've kind of got that back the last few weeks. And then if you look at all the key statistical categories, like your stoppages, inside 50s, goals scored per game, they're all in the top two or three for that, and we're in the bottom two or three. So it kind of had, it had this result written all over it from a long way out. And I think we even said on the Monday night of the game that we couldn't really pick a part of the ground that we might even have an advantage on them over, which, yeah, was a little bit annoying. But what did you make of the game? What were your thoughts? The first quarter, we weren't so bad. We looked okay movement-wise, just couldn't get the score on the board.
Actually, before we go, this is going to be separate to the rest of the Come On Man, but I've got a Come On Man for some members of our audience. Last week, I said I wasn't sure, and I went with Alga first, and then what I had is Alga, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let's just say that it is Alga. You made me change my pronunciation. I was right the first time. Come on, you lot, be better.
Speaking of Jasper. Sorry,
back to the game.
Well, we can open up with Jasper. Straight off the bat, I was really pissed off that he was made sub. And look, I don't know whether he was a late inclusion after the Kane McAuliffe scenario, so maybe there was no planning to get him into the game. But kids' day booing as sub just shits me to tears. And the reason why it annoyed me more than usual is because we knew, or we assumed, how this game was going to pan out, and it did. He's come onto the ground when it was completely dead and buried, with no zing, no fire, no nothing from the rest of the team. And he didn't have a chance to really showcase himself or enjoy the game. And I just felt like they set him up to fail, if I'm being honest. And it just doesn't sit well with me at all.
That was one of the 20... It was a big week for Come On Man, I've got to say.
We can revisit it.
And I've lost my list. That's what I was trying to scrabble beforehand. Because I got, as you know, as I told you, I was getting home very late. So,
yeah.
But yes, not a... I don't give a shit whether it's Richmond or whether it's the Scum or the Filth or the Bombers or whoever. Debutants. I saw a comment there, we don't gift out games. No, we don't. But if you're picked to play the game, it's not a gift, right? Just make K-Mac the sub. Make Smith the sub. Make someone else a sub. If you want to sub him out of the game early, halfway through the third quarter, fine, do that.
Yeah.
But debutants as subs can get in the bin, absolutely get in the bin. And not only that, with the sub, and I can't believe, you know, like that I'm the person that has to defend this, but there are a stack of players that weren't playing that well on the weekend. We keep whinging about Sonzi not getting enough game time, and he's the one that's pulled out.
Yeah, exactly. And he was actually starting to come good as well. And you look at the first quarter, even, not trying to put a bullet into Camden McIntosh, but he had three shots at goal, two went out in the full, one missed. And I'm like, I wonder if things are different if that was a genuine forward and Alga maybe had a chance to score. So I don't know. You just will never know the answers, but I just didn't like it. I thought it was a little bit stinky, we should never see it again. But on the game itself, yeah, first quarter we did okay, but then it kind of all fell apart after there. So we didn't kick a goal in the second quarter, and the Bulldogs put on 7 goals, 3, and really just did the work in a quarter and a half, essentially.
Yeah, what we said last week. There's two or three teams that at this stage of our development, we're just not equipped to play against. And the Bulldogs are one of them. There's an old boxing adage that styles make fights. And on styles and on class at the moment, we're just not equipped to fight at that level. I know we disagree on something about the game. I don't think we gave up at any stage. I just think we were totally outclassed. And what I liked was that we took the game on even though we stuffed it up. We were going into the corridor. We were using the centre. You know, so it's not like we went to our shells and just stuck to the sideline and tried to grind out an honourable 30-point loss. We tried to play the way that we want to play going forward. that doesn't upset me. We kept going in the last quarter. So from a spirit point of view, reasonably happy. There were a couple of people that really got on my goat.
Yeah.
But overall, and I mean, like, can we just give, I know he's having a great season, but can we just give all the plaudits to Nick Vlosten?
He was good.
He was enormous.
Yeah. It's, and you know what? Teams are starting to put a lot more work into Nick Vlosten now, and he's still finding a way to have an impact on the game. Like, teams are now wise enough not to let him be our spare, but he just cracks in. You know what you're getting with him every week. And yeah, he had another super game. And as did Ben Miller. And I don't know how many weeks we can say he's our best defender. And, you know, we did a tier list ranking last week, and I put him straight into the A category on the back of between preseason and now. And I still had people saying, oh, no, he's a C or a D. So he's our first picked best defender week in, week out. He kept Norton pretty well under wraps for 95% of the game. And then the 2.5 seconds he played on Sam Darcy, he stopped him from getting a goal. And then he had one, I think he took a mark in the next place, consequently. But
I'll say he's our second best defender, because I've got Vlosten as our best.
But, well, yeah, it's a fair call.
But I know what you're saying, exactly what you're saying. And you know, he was fantastic again, Miller.
Yep.
He was – Norton was getting angry. I mean, he managed to bloody try and knock Nick Vlosten out twice.
I know, yeah. Well, one of them was legal. We were just going for a mark, but yeah.
Yeah, so, no, look, I mean, Vlosten was easily our highest-rated player on the ground. You know, 28 disposals, yeah. 480 metres gained. Like, he was immense. Taranto tried really hard. You dig into it, Ross actually, I know that there's some people that are still on his back a little bit. Ross actually had a very good game as a connector.
Well, it's definitely no surprise that his output improved when he was getting a bit more midfield time again. Like, I think we've well established that he's not a half forward, like Sonzi's not a half forward. But no, he definitely had a better game than he had previous weeks, for sure.
Yeah, and Seth and Lynchy, from limited opportunities, I thought really gave us something.
No, they did. They did. They were, look, Lynch had a really good last quarter as well. I thought he stood up really well and was able to finish the transaction, so to speak, from the work done up the ground. He outbodied Rory Lobb a couple of times, was leading well. But it was just in that first quarter, we just missed out on nailing a few goals that we should have. Like I said, McIntosh, I think, missed three. Jonty Fall missed one. I think Steely Green missed one. Lynch might have missed one. Or like, just chances that we blew that could have really given us momentum going into that second quarter. But, yeah, whilst I was probably more frustrated at some certain individuals that felt like they dropped off, that didn't look like they were trying, and it probably made it look like it was the whole team, and it probably wasn't. I was probably maybe a bit of a harsh judge, but we'll rip the Band-Aid straight off. Noel Bolter.
Just with the goal kicking and the scoring, if we're 6-4 instead of 2-8, we're not winning the game, but mentally we're in a much better place in the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. And look, I still, before we jump into the Bolter thing, I, at the risk of this being harped on again, but I still think we don't have the forward mix right to give ourselves a chance to compete and score. Like, and we highlighted on Monday night that if we can't curtail Rory Lobb, we ended up taking 10 or 11 marks. One of the other defenders took 9 marks. The ball's not even getting into the 50 now. It's now being cut off at the half forward line because we just don't have the experienced bodies to compete. And Jonty Fall, I really like Jonty Fall's game. I thought his run down tackle on Ed Richards was excellent anticipation of the play. Would have loved him to have got those goals, of course, but you can see what he's going to become, and I'm all for it. But for the now, we're just not giving ourselves a shot at breaking even at these contests and giving our small forwards a chance because we can't bring it to ground often enough.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. No, four was good. I like what he bring. You know, and he flew at the contest, took a couple of grabs, you know, cracked in. Four Anthony Fox, four can't kick. Four can kick. It's just a young player who doesn't have the confidence at this stage. It's like once we say it with McAuliffe, once you get that flow on, if Fall has that two or three or four goal game, we'll be right. If Sims does that two or three goal game, we'll be right.
I still stand by as well. And like after it was actually really good to be able to watch the VFL and the AFL back to back, because it really highlighted something that I've been thinking for a while. Watching the VFL game, so McKelty was typically our deepest forward when opposition were kicking out or if they were switching around the back line or whatever. He has got the leg speed and the freshness to go and shut down those exit lanes and really put players under pressure and cause issues when other teams exit our defensive 50. At AFL level, Tom Lynch is our deepest forward. He doesn't have the wheels anymore to go and do that job. And I just think what hurts us is teams exit our defensive part of the ground way too easily because there's just next to no pressure. And that's just because Lynch is a bit older, doesn't have that same speed anymore. So it's like, can we shuffle Lynch's position in that zone so he's not the one doing that? Because we're pretty much giving up 75 metres of ground with no pressure. And that's why you'll find that teams get so many more uncontested possessions and uncontested marks against us, because we aren't able to shut down those two or three kicks across the back line and the exit out the other side.
Yep. Lynch is treacle. He's just so. He's smart and he's doing the right things. He's getting to the right places and all that when we've got the ball, but when we don't have the ball, you can see him. He's like the old steam train. He's like chug, 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 trying to get up pace. And it's not that he's not trying. It's just that he's old and he's slow.
Yeah, I know. I definitely 100%. He's busting his ass 110%. It's just he's just not as quick as he once was, and it is what it is. But I think that would make a big difference to a lot of the play that we have. And then the goal-kicking side of it, it's getting to a point now where I feel like there's so much mental pressure on all of our forwards who have a shot for goal, because they're just worried about, if I miss, when's the next one going to come? Because everyone's starting to kick really inaccurately. I think Grok sent me a stat where we'd scored like 15-42 or something in the last four quarters or something ridiculous like that. But we've got to, we've got to course correct it somehow. It's just a confidence thing. And hopefully we can override that sooner rather than later.
But Bolter, right? So I was having a discussion with RFC and it's only one or two games, so you know you can't maybe throw the baby out with the bathwater, etc. But he was saying, Darcy's going to make a lot of defenders look silly, and he is, and Darcy's going to be an amazing player and fantastic. I don't think what happened on the weekend was Darcy. That was Bolter attitude. He was reactive. He was guarding space. There was that one in the third or the last quarter where the ball's gone into the forward 50 and Darcy's literally got a 25-metre circle around him with no one on him. Bolter is out on the flank. Like,
that was the one that upset me the most. Like, you can kind of wear and understand if there was maybe a lack of communication handing over between he and some other defenders. It still looks shit when they slow it down and replay it, right? But that one where they were both at the contest on the half-forward line and then Darcy sprints back inside 50, with an exclusion zone around him, and Bolter's just wandering behind. I'm like, come on, we can't be having that.
It was like COVID spacing or something. And I don't know whether it's attitude or whether it's what it is, but it was it like in the second quarter or what it was, Bolter's got the ball on the half back line and he's striding out under no pressure and he's just kicked it off the center of his foot, like it was a properly flighted kick, just straight to a Bulldogs player, not a Richmond player anywhere to be seen. And like we were saying, we were getting torched on turnover. The amount of scores off turnover that we conceded this week was insane. And if you, if, of course we don't mean to do it, but if you give them a turnover under no pressure and it's at the centre of the ground or in the forward half, you are just cooked with an ordinary side, let alone a good side like the Bulldogs.
Exactly right. And I know a lot of people have obviously flagged that maybe there's a bit playing on Bolter's mind with the curfew and stuff, and maybe that's true. But you know what? Ultimately, he's only got the curfew because of actions that he did. So it's his own fault. So he kind of then needs to owe it to himself to repay the faith. And he's meant to be trying to earn all the trust back, and not really showing much of an effort out there kind of doesn't...
Here we go. We've got a couple of figures in there. It's either 89 or 95 points off turnover this week. Now, that will maybe address my background.
Do you want to reveal that now? That is an Apple turnover.
And the reason that I'm so frustrated by the amount of points we conceded off turnover this week is because the team we are playing next week scores more points off turnover than any other team in the competition. So that is an area we really want to tidy up if we can. Now, I actually don't think that Adelaide will score as many points because I don't think Adelaide are as clean of a football side.
But, jeez, I hope you're right.
but it's a warning.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. We'll go through a few other players quickly. Who do we go with first? Let's go with Luke Traynor. What did you make of his game? 15 disposals, 3 marks. I think someone put in chat before that his disposal efficiency was a lot higher.
Yeah, it was
still playing off a win, I think. Yep. Which is good because he was ranked the second worst kick in the AFL at one point in time.
Yep. And it was a good game. He just looks comfortable at the level. You would say that if we were playing better, he would be playing better. You can say that about a lot of players, but this is where I'm really wrapped with the players like Hopper and Taranto and Vlosten and Broad and Miller and Lynch. They're setting a really good standard every week. There was a middle group that probably were below par on the weekend, but Traynor wasn't one of them.
No, I liked him. I thought he was good. Tom Brown, he had an interesting game. He had 8 disposals, a very down game from him. But I mean, inexperienced young, it's probably going to happen. But he's definitely one. Like when things aren't going our way, and look, let's be honest, the ball spent a lot of time in our defensive part of the ground. He's probably the player you'd love to see him try and actively feed more to get him involved with some of his passings. Obviously, quite elite, just to break the game open. I wouldn't mind trying to feed him the ball a bit more.
Yeah, he looked really good in the first quarter and a bit, and I thought, oh, geez, he's looking good. I was going to put something up in the chat, but he went quiet after that. And I mean, maybe that's because so much was going through Vlosten, because I mean, Vlosten did have 28 disposals, which is really high for him. It was a bit down. He certainly wasn't in the bottom 3 or 4. I'll put
Tom
it
Brown.
He was, yeah.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah. Bolter was worst on, and I know that there's been a lot of discussion about this bloke. I reckon that was probably Hugo's poorest game of the year.
Yeah, and I've been seeing a lot of comparisons about Hugo and Davidson. A bit of unfortunate timing from Hugo on some fronts, but I just want to say, and I'm not making excuses for Hugo because he didn't have a great game, but Davidson for the Bulldogs is in a much different environment where he's able to slot into a well-oiled machine and just play his role, not have to worry about anything else. Hugo's in a real shitstorm at the moment in an inexperienced team, probably having to do a lot more than what most wingers have to try and do. And it's just not the same comparison. So I know Sam Davidson obviously tore it up and will probably continue to do so, and he's a good player, but he's in a much better side than what Hugo is and can just slot into the role and do his thing while he's still got Bont, Libert, Treloar and whatever doing everything else. But, I mean, you still want to see better output. So I don't want to diminish the fact that you still want to see better output from Hugo going forward, though.
Yeah. Kylie, CBA is a centre bounce attendance.
Speaking of centre bounce attendance, I do want to talk about the midfield again. Feel like it's a broken record kind of discussion, EJ, but again, what grinds my gears a little bit is we don't see any flexibility or variation when the game's beyond doubt. We still roll the same unit in with the Prestia, Taranto, Hopper, Ross. I think Camden appeared a couple of times. And then, you know, the game gets on and all of a sudden we see Seth Campbell in there. I'm like, oh, hey, how good does that look? Then to find out post-game that that wasn't a coach directive, that was him taking it upon himself to inject himself into the midfield after the club would have no doubt spoken about maybe his ability to potentially do that at some point in time. So one, good on Seth Campbell for doing it. But two, I still don't understand why we don't mix things up when the game's out of reach and we need to try and find something, because we just had no spark, no energy, no nothing anywhere across the ground at a certain point in time. There has to be a reason behind it. I just can't understand what it might be.
Well, this week I actually get it, because the Bulldogs have probably got the best collection of hard bodies. You know, you've got Libber, Bont, Richards, which for them is a dynamic mix because they're different types of players, but they're all physical, mature, ready to rock, A-grade, tick-em midfielders. Whereas if we do put – I'm glad to see the Campbell win in. I am disappointed that it was of his own.
And the ball just never went his way. The two times he was in there, it got nowhere near him, unfortunately, so we couldn't even see it unfold.
Yeah. Yeah, so I know why they're going in a high percentage of bounces, but I don't understand why that last 20% mix doesn't change more often.
Like, I'm not at all suggesting to not have all three, like to remove all three of Taranto, Hopper and Prestia, because that would be throwing the younger kids to the wolves and not a good thing. But swap one out every centre bounce or something. Like 90% for Taranto and Hopper is crazy. I don't reckon many other teams would have that type of number. And that's a week in, week out figure. They are going to be gassed by before too long. And like I credit to them for doing the amount of work that they're doing. But I just think we're robbing ourselves a bit by not having some other faces in there. And like I've always said, when the game starts and the game's on the line, go with your top tier ones, 100%, no problem. But when the game's done and there's a learning experience to maybe be had, this is the year to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, maybe when a couple of them come back, or maybe when one comes back in a couple of weeks and another one debuts shortly, maybe we might see it.
We will. All right. Well, that might be a wrap on the AFL game. Was there anything else? Is there anything else you wanted to touch on first before we go to the VFL?
No. I think we've covered it all. We've been equal parts. Hopefully we've been a little bit positive, but I think we've got the negativity out of the way for a while.
Yeah. I probably want to finish on that we still need to remember where we are in our development. And we've said all along that these games were going to happen. And look, it didn't go out over 100, so that is a small win. I know it's not, we're not trying to pump up a 79-point loss, but we kept it under 100. Losses like this are going to happen. And if you just go look at the key statistical categories, this was inevitable because of how good the Bulldogs perform in the areas that are clearly our weaknesses. So it was just never going to mesh well. And it is what it is. I still don't buy into people trying to oust Uzay as well. You've got to remember we're 15 games into his rebuild. Last year, like I said, I don't think last year doesn't count for anything. I truly don't get that. And like we've sort of said, we won't have a good indication on how he's going there until about 27, 28. So I think we need to just hold fire on trying to get people sacked. Yeah, you can be upset about the losses and stuff like that. It's going to be par for the course. It's going to be a bit of a roller coaster, but just also try and maintain some perspective and balance as well.
Can I flip the narrative here for about 30 seconds?
Yeah.
All right. We have had a bad weekend and we're probably a bit more down than we have been in previous weeks. But big picture, that was our eighth debut. We've got probably another two coming up in the next few weeks, right? It's 10 debuts, right? We've got two first-round draft picks this year, another chance to either get another missing piece or get another two top 10 draft kids, right? We are at base camp. and we are starting the long climb back up to the top.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right.
If you look at the weekend and you look at Carlton, they have got basically a mature team. They've got old players like McGovern, Cripps, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're as good as they're going to be in their current state.
Yeah, well, they played finals last year, so.
They are going to have to get new players in, and Tasmania is here.
Yeah, it's not all bad.
I would rather be right now. 100%. I'd rather be second last on the ladder looking up than in free fall like Carlton.
And the Bulldogs have beaten other more experienced sides than us by bigger margins. So not all bad. And like Peter, I kind of know what you're trying to get at, that you're frustrated about that we're years away, but it's an accurate statement. We are years away. That is factually correct. And that's just the reality of where we're at. So we just got to buckle in, go along for the ride.
But if we get eight wins next year, 6 to 8 wins next year, 10 to 12 wins the year after, and the year after that we're playing finals, happy days.
Yeah, even just the exposure of the debutants. You mentioned the debutants. It's phenomenal how many debutants we've had. I challenge anyone, not challenge, but see if anyone can tell me when the last time a team debuted 5-plus plays, 6-plus plays in a year. I don't think it would have happened very often.
Essendon have debuted about 11 this year. But anyway, that was this year. Yes, they have.
Really?
Yeah.
Where have they been hiding 11 players? Oh, well,
I don't know. That from the record. Essendon are debuting heaps.
Are they really? There we go.
Yep.
All right, well, on to the VFL, because there was some leather pants and bathrobes around everywhere for this game, and we lost by 45 points, but that was completely irrelevant and not really the point of the VFL game. It was all about Taj Houghton playing his first VFL game for the Richmond Football Club, and there was some genuine scare because we did a live watch-along for the first quarter. We were all panicking because we couldn't see him for the first quarter, not because of the blurry cameraman who... That was frustrating. But we soon realized that he wasn't actually playing the first quarter. That was structured, and he was going to play the last three. So, yeah, we were a little bit nervous.
That would have given you a heart attack.
Because there was people at the ground watching the live saying, oh, he's still got his tracksuit top on. And we're like, oh, my God, something's happened. We're like, surely someone would have picked up on this by now. But, yeah, he wasn't playing in the first quarter. They wanted to unleash him in the second, third, and fourth. But... 14 disposals, 3 marks, 2 tackles. I know 14 disposals doesn't seem like a lot in totality, but offered like really limited game time. So no first quarter and just played sporadically throughout the other three quarters. It was just the impact and the way he moved around the ground, EJ, that was really, really likable. I think his first touch was an inside 50. I think it maybe just got outmarked in the forward line. Then he set up McKelty LaFau with another inside 50. He just read the ball across, run across the pack, took a mark, got it moving quickly, picked up a nice half volley because it was a short pass to him and then got that moving forward. And then in the last quarter, he pretty much sprinted the length of the ground. He started in the back line and worked his way up the ground with about a chain of 3 or 4 disposals. And he was knackered by the end of it. But he looked really, really good. Once he gets his fitness up, he will not be in the VFL for long. And I know some people are saying, oh, we'll just shelve him for next year. Nah, once his fitness is there and if his form continues like this, get him in, because we need players who can use the ball and he will be wasted in the VFL.
Well, I'm excited.
He was good. Marley's excited too. She loved the debut as well. But
Is that your dog's name?
What's that?
Is that your dog's name?
Marley, yeah.
We've got a dog named Marley.
Oh, there you go. Does it yap like this one?
Yes.
But
the Prince of Punt Road.
Yes. Yeah, I have seen that, because I think it was, is Taj have a meaning of prince? I think someone said something somewhere like down that, the line.
Or royalty or crown or some, yeah.
Yeah, he looked really, really good. But in terms of some of the other AFL listed players, Jacob Blight, 27 disposals and 14 marks. This is now the fifth week in a row that he's had over 20 disposals and 10 marks. It's getting to the point that you can't ignore that. So he was actually the leading disposal getter from an AFL listed perspective for us. Tyler Young had 23 touches, 9 marks. He actually looked okay. 3 tackles. Kaczynski, 17. So our 3 key backs have had a bit of the ball there. Trezise, 16 disposals, 4 marks, 2 tackles. Tyler, we spoke about. Morris Rioli, 13 disposals, 1 mark, 7 tackles, 4 clearances. Now, on Morris, those numbers do sound low. I was still really impressed with the impact he had on the game. He had a lot of repeat efforts, a lot of good pressure, a lot of good chasing and tackling. I still thought he had a really solid game. So I know it wasn't his 25 disposals from a few weeks ago. I'm not sure if it's enough to get him into the side, but it's still a good step forward. I don't think he regressed. I think it was still a really good game, pretty well-rounded. Who else was there? Jacob Bauer had 8 disposals, 3 behinds. He actually botched one of the... I think Taj set him up with a mark and he missed. McKelty, 7 disposals, 4 tackles, 2 marks, 1 goal. Hayes Brown, 7 disposals. Fawcett, 4 disposals, 2 goals. He battled pretty hard, Fawcett. And Kalina, 2 disposals, 14 hitouts, 1 tackle. So that was, yeah. I think he gave away a 52, Kalina. So that wasn't a great day out. But Taj, I reckon he's a few weeks away from coming in. But what about Jacob Blight? I mean, I know we've got Noah Bolter in there, and there's probably a conversation to be had soon about what does that look like. It's getting really difficult to ignore putting a player in who's... We want to talk about selection integrity. The bloke's more than bashed down the door for 5 consecutive weeks. I'm not sure what more he can do.
Yeah. Well, I think if I was in charge, I'd probably drop Bolter on attitude alone. But I have the feeling that he won't be dropped. But definitely, I mean, he was pretty ordinary against Sydney as well.
Yeah.
He was no good against Sydney. So this has got to be last chance saloon. No player is immune from being dropped. I don't care if he's the longest contracted player at the club. If he isn't dropped this week, he'd want to have a very good game.
He would want to. Now, Skadoosh, we are at the MCG this week, so Bolter will be eligible to play this game based on all the timelines and things like that. So, but, yeah, I'm not sure what... Like, the other one who may come in, I still think Lafau has to be a sneaky chance in some way, shape, or form, and Trezise could be an option as well. But that's the VFL wrap-up. I don't think we've seen a fitness report yet today, but what we did see on the weekend... On Sunday, the club did post a tweet showing that Lawler, Armstrong and Gibkiss were all training. They're doing another session on the Sunday, which was good. So hopefully Sammy Lawler's not far away. Gibkiss is maybe, I think, what was it last time, 2 or 3 weeks away. And Armstrong does look a little bit bigger in the upper body, which we were kind of all hoping for after the time off that he's had. And we'll hopefully see him in the latter part of the year too. But yeah, some players coming back in. But, fitness report tomorrow. There we go. So, with that said, it's probably now time for Come On Man, if you've got your list ready to go. It's an extensive list this week, folks. So, if you do have any nominations for Come On Man.
I've forgotten half of them. I've written them down in the car, but, yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm waiting for the sting. Sorry. No sting. Stingless.
No, I played sting. It. Oh, did it not play?
Come on, man.
There we go.
No, righty-o. First of all, CB put out a tweet on the weekend and he retweeted himself in about 5 minutes. Come on, man.
He doesn't quite understand.
And you bloody liked it too, by the way. So
I like the original, not the retweet. Didn't realise he's gone and retweeted in 5 minutes. Jeez.
Yeah, we've covered off Jasper and debuts. Like, just don't do it again. Don't ever do it. Just don't do it. I've had enough. That's just shit out. The AFL or the MRO finding Windhager for that push to the chest of Nick Dacos, the golden boy. Now, it wasn't even a play free kick. You can actually see Steel Sidebottom laughing at the free kick being given because he knows it's a con job, right? Not only that, when they put out the tweet showing the instance where he got the push in the chest and Nick dropping like he'd been shot with a bazooka, they conveniently cut off the 5 seconds before where he'd done exactly the same to Windhager and nothing happened. Like, and I hear that St Kilda are providing a written submission to fight this tomorrow night. Good on them. MRO and Christian, get
come on,
stuck.
Man.
Come on, man.
That was as big of an open hand push as you will see. That was not anything more than that at all. Crazy.
I'm trying to find the list, and we are going to get help from our audience here, because there was a tweet which was from a year ago or something, which has been re-presented to the Twitter audience about Sam McClure saying, if you don't have Carlton as your favourites for the flag, you don't know football. It was last year or the year before. And he said that with Curnow and McKay, they had one of the greatest forward combinations in modern day football. Greatest of all time forward combinations in modern day football.
Yep.
Now, I'm not sure if he has forgotten about Rewalt Lynch, Mooney Hawkins, Buddy and Roughhead, Rewalt and Kaczynski. Like, this is from since the year 2000. Like, it was one of the, I mean, he lives in the come on man space. We should actually rename it the Sam McClure Award, if I'm honest.
We could, but, yes.
But when we went back over this tweet, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, the bloke has zero idea. We sat there and in our chat, we named, I think, 8 or 9 combinations that you'd have before you had
ahead of them.
Curnow and McKay. And look, Curnow, he's not a bad footballer, inconsistent, but not a bad footballer. Harry McKay is tall. That's what he is. He's tall. That's it. He's tall.
It's an come extraordinary
on,
call.
Come on, man.
All right. I'm done.
So there was no update to the leaderboard, but we are in discussions about extending to a top 10. So we will come back to this at some point. But yeah, plenty of depth.
Ross Warner, invite him on the show for the award presentation.
We should get him on. We should. Yeah, for Fulham weight, they would have been better. Plenty of
yes.
Better combinations. That's
a better combination at the same bloody club.
Yeah. Anyway, he's all over the shop. All right, well, I think it's now time to talk about the upcoming game against the Crows, which is at the MCG on, is it Sunday? I think we're playing. Where's my
finger? I think so. On?
Sunday, yeah, Sunday, 3:20 p.m. at the MCG. The Crows, yeah, so they had the bye last week, but they were coming off a 3-point loss to the Hawks. So they've had a relatively okay year, though, so far. They're probably performing at a level that I thought they might have played at last year. But to your point earlier, they seem to be a bit of a kryptonite-based team with what they do really well, with what we do really badly. So first of all, let's start with the changes. What do we think the ins and outs are going to be for the game against the Crows? Some contenders for some outs could be Caleb Smith could be in contention. We can say Bolter, but we both know it's not going to happen. Does Camden McIntosh, Steely Green, there's probably a few names that could chop and change. I'll be really shitty if Alga gets dropped after pretty much giving him no chance of succeeding. But in terms of who's a chance to come in, it's probably surrounds. Blight's a chance to come in. Lafau might for structural reasons. Trezise might, and maybe MRJ. So they're probably the four we're looking at who could come in.
RFC is going to fall off his chair, but I don't know about the ins because I don't know if Lawler's ready. But I agree that if we drop four, that Hugo, Smith, Green, and Sims are the logical outs. Nothing against Sims. He just needs a rest, and he needs to work on his craft a bit. That's where we're talking about getting a mature body into the forward line. And I think Jonty is showing enough that he can stay. I think I'm fading into the Philip pastry. I think that we have to give players a chance that are performing it. And I think that Smith in particular has had a few games now and maybe should go back and find some form.
Not liking what you're seeing. Think there's better options. I mean, I think Trezise can do as good or better job.
Yeah, I do too. I'm not saying by any stretch that Smith isn't going to make it. I love his endeavour and his will, but from a skill perspective, currently he's not at the standard. I don't think, and I think that Trezise is a more logical option at the moment.
Trezise would also then add some flexibility where he could play on the wing, which could put Trainer back into defence if we think he's better suited there, or they could swap and actually got a direct swap between Trezise and Trainer if we wanted to.
Trezise, Trainer, Banks, you can move all three of them around. So
I'm bullish on Smith as well long term. I'm just not sure for the now it's working as well as it could, but I'm in agreement that I think, again, one of Sims or Fall has to be rested. I just think we're giving ourselves no chance up front, especially when you look at the Crows defenders. We've got Worrell, Keane, Hinge, Butts. I know Laird's obviously a bit smaller, but yeah, we can't keep assisting with two inexperienced guys up front. Unfortunately, it's just not working. I don't think we'll make the change. I think we're going to persist with it for whatever reason. I guess it's an experience reason. But if it was me, I would maybe leave Sims out and go with a Lafau or a Blight. I still think that there's something that he can offer down there too. That or you roll Bolter forward and put Blight in defence. I don't know. You've got to try and find a way to get Blight in though. Looking at their forwards, so they've got some big monsters up there as well, don't they? Riley Filthorpe is an absolute behemoth. Taylor Walker, obviously a big unit as well in the back end of his career. Who would you send to Riley Filthorpe? I mean, on the back of Bolter getting pantsed by Darcy, I mean, he's probably physically the better matchup, but I don't know whether we'd go with it.
Physically, he's the perfect matchup. And, you know, but I'd be tempted. Okay, so who have they got down there? Filthorpe, Walker, and Fogarty.
Yep, Fogarty. Yep.
Right. So Fogarty can be any number of people. That can be Broad, that can be, you know, because Fogarty's not overly, he's not oversized. He can be covered by a medium. So it's Walker and Filthorpe. Walker's obviously a bit slower, a bit more ponderous, so you would be good to be able to put Miller on him if we can trust Bolter doing the job on Filthorpe.
Wow, yeah, it's like, can we though? The million dollar question.
It also depends on who plays deep, because that's probably more likely going to be the Miller matchup, with Bolter being a little bit higher up the ground.
Yeah. I suppose you would rather Bolter be a bit further up the ground if you had to pick one, if it gets him engaged a bit more. Yeah, a lot of people flagging the Daniel Curtin, their wing was 197 centimetres. That almost by default. I mean, well, Luke Train is 195, but Curtin's a lot thicker and more built. But, yeah, if Trainer's playing there, you have to back him in somehow, or Camden McIntosh maybe has to revert back to a wing roll to try and negate and shut down if that's got to happen. And to Jones' Racing Point, if you bring a Blight in to play in defence, does that let Noah Bolter get back to a more familiar bit of territory for him by intercept defending rather than having to play super accountable football?
Yeah, but are we then too top-heavy down back?
Maybe.
Because, maybe, I mean, you've got at the feet, you've got Rochelle, Rankin, what's his name? Ben Keys.
Ben Keys, he's always dangerous.
The hyphen from Melbourne.
Neil Bullen.
Neil Bullen, right? So they've got a good set of medium and small as well. So you can't get too top heavy in defence. So Blight and Bolter is an either or. You can't have both because we're not dropping Miller. We're not dropping Ward. Sorry?
Well, the only other way is if one of them goes up the other end of the ground as the maturer body.
Okay. But
that's the only way you can play them both.
Do we want to play a natural forward like a McKelty up forward as a mature body rather than a Blight or a Bolter? Because Bolter is he's headless up forward. He's athletically good, but he's headless up forward.
After seeing McKelty's efforts in terms of shutting down players, I'd love to see him do that at AFL level. He tackles the hurt. He pressures the players kicking out of the back half, which we don't have currently. I know he didn't get big disposal numbers, but he was smashing into contests all day, bringing the ball to ground, doing exactly what we need to happen at AFL level. He might not get 15 touches, but he doesn't really have to. He's just giving all our other players a chance. So I would be all in for McKelty coming in for Sims to play that role. Then the question would just become who plays backup ruck. I know McKelty can do that. I'm a little bit skeptical on whether I would put him in at the centre bounce coming off the knee. I guess, the medical staff and McKelty would know how he could cope with that better. But McKelty around the ground rucking, no issues at all. He can 100% do that. So I'm not sure who their backup ruck would be, but Riley O'Brien obviously does bulk of the ruck work.
McKelty can do it, no drama.
You would do it? Yeah, you'd roll the dice?
Yep. Oh, well, realistically, if you're fit enough to play VFL/AFL, you're fit enough to go in the ruck. It's not like the old days where you run from 10 yards back and smash into each other. You're operating out of the smaller circle. And the ruck problem for the knees was the PCL anyway, not the ACL.
Yeah.
He can second ruck.
Does it then flip? Like, are we then better off keeping Sims instead of Fall?
I think if McKelty comes in, he can do the second ruck. Fall has been offering, apart from the one sort of breakout game from Dim Sims, Fall's been offering more around the ground. And I think we go with that at this stage. Because as you say, what we're trying to do is lock the ball down in the forward 50, bring it to ground. We're better of a chance to do that with Fall. And his defensive efforts probably are superior at this stage as well.
Yeah, fair enough, Cole. Nathaniel, Samson Ryan's got plantar fasciitis, I believe I read somewhere. So that's why he hasn't been playing at any level of football. Midfield-wise, I mean, Jordan Dawson, I'm not sure how many Adelaide games people watch out there, but I somehow end up watching their games because I've got Isaac Rankin in my super coach, so a little bit of interest in the game. But Jordan Dawson is honestly one of the best last quarter players I think I've ever seen. He just always finds a way to step up and impact games when he needs to. He's going to be a tough midfield matchup. Isaac Rankin, Sam Berry, Rory Laird off halfback. Saligo is a bit of an underrated midfielder as well. It just feels like, again, the outside speed of some of their midfielders could be a bit too much for us as the game gets on.
Weirdly, I think the midfield is the one area where we can sort of semi-match them.
In a contested way? Definitely not from a speed way.
Yes. From a break away from midfield and a class perspective, not unless we change the mix, but from a contested ball perspective, I think we can match them.
We're going to have to, aren't we? What about our forward line does Lynch, I'm not sure, Markeen probably would try and see it, again, Markeen, we're going to have the same issue with Markeen that we did with Rory Lobb, that if we can't keep him accountable, he's just going to float across, intercept Mark, and cut across Tom Lynch, which is going to be disastrous. But I suppose that's why it's important to have someone like a McKelty in there, isn't it, to keep him occupied?
Yeah. Sorry, it's absolutely hosing down here.
Yeah, I can hear it.
So apologies, everyone, but there's not much I can do.
No,
I've been a bit distracted the last 10 seconds. So what was that about Markeen? Sorry.
He's going to play that Rory Lobb role, isn't he, to try and intercept and float across Lynch. So we need to somehow keep him occupied. For me, the biggest thing I want to see change this week against the Crows, I want to see us be able to bring the ball to ground more than what we do in the front half of the ground. Give Steely Green and Seth Campbell, Mansell, Algo, if he's playing, give all of them an actual chance to get to work and to get the ball moving forward, because we shut them out of the games ourselves, don't we? And goal kicking as well. It goes without saying, but we want to see some accuracy in front of goal.
Okay, so you've actually touched on something that I wanted to talk about anyway, in regards to one of the reasons for bringing McKelty in is a more mature, dynamic option, etc. With the two kids at the moment, we're too Lynch focused. The opposition knows that. So it's easy for double and triple team, right? If you've got a mature McKelty who's actually going to provide a contest, and you start splitting where the ball goes, so the target zone isn't as obvious, right? Defenders have less chance to congregate around one drop zone. They have to cover multiple areas. So, yeah, that's a big reason why I think, whether it's McKelty or Bauer or whoever, but that second mature person up forward, I think, is really important for us.
Yeah, for that exact reason, agree. Morris Jr. in for Green. Him and McKelty would make it hard for Adelaide to transition out. I wouldn't mind seeing it. My only preface would be, if we're going to bring Morris Jr. in, I truly believe that he has to end up getting some midfield minutes, because I really don't think he's going to make it as a full-time small forward. But as someone is swapping down there and resting down there or whatever, I think it could work. But I guess the argument will be that you want to see some more consistency at VFL level before he gets anywhere near the midfield minutes. But I get the point, though, with the forward pressure piece. It's something we have to address very, very quickly. What about, is there anything about the method of play that you want to see differently against the Crows? How do we stop these big quarter fadeouts? How do we maintain confidence in our ability and not drop our heads if we kick a couple of behinds?
Minimise turnovers.
It's all between the years, isn't it?
Minimise turnovers. If we minimise turnovers, we minimise the opposition's chance to score, specifically against Adelaide. Whether that means we play a, and I hate to say it because it would be boring, but whether we play a safer game style, like the old game in the late 2000s with
Plough. The Terry Wallace game, the basketball game.
The keepings off game.
That was against Adelaide as well, wasn't it, from memory?
It was. Yes. And it's I don't want to see that, but whichever way we go forward, we have to minimise the turnovers. Whether that's putting it into the hands of Brown instead of coming out with someone like Miller, because Brown is prepared to take the 45 kick and he's got a chance to make it. Someone like Traynor at the moment will take the kick, but their chances of making it are this big. So it's about getting the ball in the right hands and minimising the turnovers. That is our only chance of limiting the damage, because I don't think we can win this week.
It's a real balance, isn't it? Because we want to minimise turnover, but we also do want to see them still taking those risky kicks into the corridor. It's a real fine line, isn't it?
It's a bit of a 1 week thing too. The minimising. I mean, you want to minimise turnovers every week, but just specifically this week because of who the opponent is and the way that they play.
And their strength in the game. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, exactly right. David. That's exactly right.
This one, the turnovers?
Yeah. The difference is they punished us because the Dogs are right up there on that turnover score ladder as well. And that is a perfect example of why against this sort of side, we have to minimise the turnover. It was showing up on the weekend for what it was.
Ronnie's got a question. Do we think that we're giving teams too much teasing distance when on the mark, or am I seeing things? I definitely think I haven't really paid much attention to opposition when doing this, but it feels like we do rather move back into the outside five zone more often than not, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I've noticed that there's two or three sides that are really good at going up to the mark and being able to go that 1 or 2 meters over and not get called for infringements?
We can't try that. We're not with no. all teams. We cannot try
that's,
that.
No, that's not us. But, yeah, I think it's a situational thing. Maybe we do it too much, but that's obviously because we're trying to set up and we're an immature side. Maybe a more mature side has the confidence that one or two players can really press up on the mark and their structure is not going to be adversely affected. I think it might be a bit of safety.
Yeah, I think it's just trying to have a number further back. I think a lot of teams do it and there'll be reasons behind it, more about clogging up space and getting back behind the ball. But
we've got some very astute listeners who have picked up on one of the sides that's very good at it.
Collingwood?
Yes, yes.
They are creeping over the mark.
They are very good at it.
David's gone to Geelong and Collingwood.
Yes, yes. There is one other side, but yes, that's two of the three sides that I noticed that are very, very good.
I'll guess Gold Coast is the third.
I haven't noticed that because I don't watch much Gold Coast. But
saying because they get a lot of
you watch, kicks. But you watch, right? When you watch these teams play, when they go to the mark, they just go that one. It's only a yard, but what it does is it forces the attacker back a yard as well because they have to go away from the mark. It's very good coaching and it's very well implemented.
We'll try it once and we'll get pinged. Mark my words. A few people have also flagged the uncontested side of the game as well. And it's a really good point. It's probably if you were to look at the stats from the Brisbane game, not plays, but like team stats, it actually reads like it would have been a close encounter. Like stoppages, we didn't really lose by much. Contested possession was fairly close. Inside 50s, I don't think there was too big of a difference. But the biggest one was uncontested possessions. I think it might have been 100 or more. And again, I think that all stems from not being able to shut down space quick enough when they've got it in our forward line. How do you address that? Because I think it just ultimately leads to too many free players up the ground and it's forcing our zone to shift and get out of shape. And by the time they move over, I think that's when the holes open up in the middle of the ground.
I just think it's a practice.
It's just a learning thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep. We've just got to keep trying to maintain it as much as possible. And in game, it'll improve by a metre, 2 metres, 3 metres. And all of a sudden, everyone will be moving in unison and it won't be a problem. It's familiarity as much as anything as well. I noticed that Sydney said after the weekend that having Goulden and Amati back, that there was the trust in what they would do and how they would do it.
And we even saw against us having Mills back gave them a bit more confidence than other parts of the ground too, especially someone like Blakey, who then tore us to shreds.
Yeah, so what we need is for Vlosten and Broad, etc., to get this current mob up to standard. If you remember back in the day when we were not quite good enough and we had Chaplin come over from Port Adelaide, he was very instrumental in guiding Rance and Grimes and setting everything up from the back there. It's just time, and Rance and Grimes and Asprey became really familiar and comfortable with what everyone else was going to do. Then the next lineup trusts, and the next lineup trusts, the next lineup trusts, and then the whole team moves together. It's just a time thing.
And I think we've already got that in our back six. We just don't have that same cohesion further up the ground. So when you're trying to do a full ground zone, that's where it starts breaking down. We get picked apart, unfortunately. But that all being said and done, what is the final tip, including margin? Send them through in the comments as well. We'll put a few up on the screen. What are you going with, EJ? You were pretty close last week.
Yeah. I'll go Adelaide by 43 points. I think we'll go much better against Adelaide than we did against the Dogs.
Hopefully them coming off the bye has a similar effect to what we were like off the bye, and they're maybe a bit sluggish, but
I MCG reckon... MCG not Marvel.
Yeah, that's definitely helped well.
Yeah.
Jones Racing's pretty confident, Tigers by 15 goals, which is good. I reckon that it might be the Crows by 35 to 40. Again, this could be one that we come out and surprise a few people with. I mean, you just want to see that response, don't you? That middle section of the game, we just have to be better. We can't have a third game in a row where we just completely switch off the boil and get pummeled relentlessly for a quarter and a half and don't score. I mean, I know this sounds like a really small stepping stone, but even just to be able to kick goals in every quarter would be a good step forward. Like, I'm kind of getting to the point of being fed up with having goalless quarters. I think no matter how bad you are, how much in a rebuild you are, you still should be able to score at least a goal a quarter minimum at some point in time. So that would be something I'd like to tick off this week, a goal a quarter at least.
Yeah. I can see us. I could not in any way see us compete with the Bulldogs. I can see us compete with Adelaide.
Yeah, there wasn't much hope with the Bulldogs, was there? But we'll, if Sammy Lawler's a test and he plays, that'd be something nice to look forward to as well. We'll have to see what comes out of that. The other thing that worries me about the Crows is I think they will still be almightily pissed off about us beating them last year on their home deck too. I don't think that would have gone down too well, and I feel like this game might have been circled from a long way out from them as a bit of redemption potentially. But, yeah, we'll see how we go. Anyway, thank you, EJ, for jumping on tonight. Appreciate your time as always. Thank you to everybody in chat. Make sure you get around us on all the socials, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Always happy to engage and talk. No trade news. I haven't spoken to Tiggs about trade stuff or Grok, but if he's got anything Wednesday night, I'm sure he'll let us all know. But, no, nothing else on that front just yet. But have a wonderful rest of the week, everybody. We're going to do the votes video now. And that someone may have actually, for the first time, received max votes, believe it or not. So that'll be interesting to see, yes, how that all plays out. But have a wonderful evening, folks, and we'll see you next week. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.